Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, Section A, State and Local News, for Friday, July 28, 2023. Bond Presentation Things to Know, High Schools, by Stuart Doreen. Should voters approve Proposition A in November, that would include the building of two new 4,200-seat high schools. Highlights of the Midland ISD Bond Planning Committee presentation to the school board on Tuesday included that the new Midland High School will be located at the Ranchland Hills Golf Club, 1600 East Wadley Avenue, and the new Legacy High School will be located south of the Scarborough Sports Complex at Thomason Drive and Tradewinds Boulevard. The high schools will be two stories tall, and both will be 790,000 total square feet. The school's cafeteria will support a closed campus for ninth graders and open campus for grades 10 through 12. There will also be no changes to attendance zones. Academic offerings include 100 general-purpose classrooms, 24 science labs, learning commons, and collaboration areas, a media center, and nearly 27,000 square feet to support specialized education. Career and technical education, CTE, offerings include agriculture, food and natural resources, plant science, floral design, veterinary and agriculture, information technology, arts, AV technology and communications, graphic arts, digital media, audio-video technology, communications, business, finance and marketing, business management, finance and accounting, and education and training, education and child development, human services, cosmetology, and STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Performing and visual arts offerings include 6 art labs, digital media lab, photography studio, band, choir, orchestra, mariachi, an 800-seat auditorium, black box theater, dance and drill team, and speech and debate. Athletic offerings included practice field with running track, artificial turf, lights, and bleachers. Competition softball field with artificial turf, 500 capacity bleachers and lights. Competition baseball field with artificial turf, 500 capacity bleachers and lights. A multi-purpose indoor practice facility to support band, cheer, drill team, and outdoor athletic teams. 2,000-seat competition gymnasium. 3 450-seat multi-purpose gyms for indoor sports and physical education. A cheer studio. The following also was part of the presentation made to the Midland ISD School Board regarding improvements to the high schools. They include daylit classrooms with views to the exterior. The budget includes all furniture, fixtures, equipment, and complete technology systems. Safety and security features such as secured entry, vestibules, updated cameras, intrusion alarms, access control, intercom, and radio communication systems. Separate bus and parent drives. 2,200 student, staff, and event parking. Paved band marching field. Maintenance site work, student support offerings, a counseling center, a conference center, campus clinic, and professional learning centers. Murray files for MISD District 7 election by Stuart Doreen. Brian Murray will run for the Midland ISD District 7 board seat he had to give up, and his agenda is simple: do what is best for kids. He is the first candidate from the generally Northwest Midland District to file for November 7th's board election. Those interested in filing can do so through August 21st by filing an application with the superintendent's office. Murray was required to give up his elected position in June, as his two sons have accepted positions to teach and coach football at Legacy High School, their alma mater. A state nepotism law doesn't allow them to start work for MISD if he is on the board, he previously told the Reporter-Telegram. Murray had previously stated that he looked forward to running for the seat again as soon as it is legally possible, and should he win in November, he could reclaim that position in January. Murray told the Reporter-Telegram this week his motivation to run was being able to finish his term, which will end in 2024, and that he was passionate about school board work and what Midland ISD is doing. He talked about the improvement in student outcomes that started with former Superintendent Angelica Ramsey and the momentum the district has had with current Superintendent Stephanie Howard. I was elected in 2020 for 4 years, and I want to complete that, Murray said. He said doing what's best for kids sometimes means making a hard decision that you don't want to do. He said even after resigning his seat in June, he still made bond planning committee meetings, seeing the information provided and observing decisions made. The overarching thing was safety for the kids and the committee's desire to spend money and build classrooms, Murray said about the process. They didn't want portables. He said his time on the board, which included time as board president, has shown his constituents that he is willing to put in the time, be prepared for meetings, and do what was best for Midland ISD students and employees. I am a person who cares what people think about me, Murray said. You have to put in the time. It's hard to find a meeting when I wasn't prepared. I wish others understood what went into it. My agenda is what is best for kids. He said there is a wide array of ideas in Midland about what is best for education in Midland, and that those involved know education is the cornerstone for Midland's future. We want what is best for kids, Murray said. Murray's wife and two sons are teachers inside Midland ISD, and he stated that he brings financial experience to the board, that the district has benefited from that experience. District 7 includes the following areas: Green Tree, Briarwood, Saddle Club Ranch Estates, Great House, a section bordered by Garfield Street on the east, Midland Drive on the west, Bluebird Avenue on the north, and Loop 250 on the south, and another section bordered by Loop 250 and Briarwood to the north, Wadley Avenue to the south, Holiday Hill and Loop 250 to the west, and Midkiff Road to the east. Additional details and application information can be found at midlandisd.net. Midlanders find more than empanadas from Ms. Rias. Childhood memories, love for Midland cooked into each famous empanada. By Morgan Taylor Thomas. Although she's never worked in the food industry, Maria Rias decided 5 months ago she wanted to share her childhood food with the community. Knowing a full restaurant would be too much, the chef realized making Miss Rias's famous empanadas, a food truck, balanced her foodie dreams, and she could run it in her spare time. Originally from Mexico, Maria grew up eating and making empanadas with her family. Commonly filled with a savory inside, empanadas not only served as a staple in her home, but a comfort food as well. However, once she started sharing her generational recipe with fellow Midlanders, Maria started to notice a few cultural differences. I'm trying to find out about others, like Venezuelan empanadas, Colombian empanadas. The first thing customers come and ask me is, where are you from? Rias explained. These are Mexican empanadas. While Venezuelan empanadas use a plantain recipe for the dough, making them slightly sweeter, Maria doesn't add anything to her made-from-scratch dough, ultimately allowing the outside to crisp to perfection. Maria also makes all her fillings from scratch over a 2 to 3 day period, allowing the meats to roast and marinate in her high standard of flavor. Along with the help of her husband and other family members, Miss Reyes's family empanadas can be found Fridays and Saturdays at the weekly Golf Course Road food truck gathering, 3500 West Golf Course Road. To find out a weekly schedule, follow Maria on Facebook. Hot Bites. Maria offers many savory fillings for her empanadas. Cheese, asado, chicken, potato, bean and cheese, ground beef, and more creations on the way. Each dish comes with four empanadas filled to the brim with a delicious and juicy filling. Another cultural difference Maria noticed is related to American requests. Based on her experience, the business owner said many Midlanders were surprised to find empanadas filled with meat instead of fruit and other sweets. So, to combat their demand and keep customers coming back, Maria added sweet empanadas to the menu. Guests can choose between a puree-styled filling of strawberry, pineapple, mango, and more. With fresh fruit chunks, the sweet empanadas are the perfect dessert or midday snack. Miss Reyes's famous empanadas also offers churro cheesecake and Mexican bolis, ice cream in an ice pop shape. Overall vibe? Finding a spot in the food truck scene can be challenging, especially for newcomers. Yet Maria and her empanadas have received nothing but praise, and for good reason. Although Miss Reyes's famous empanadas is Maria's side gig, she doesn't fall victim to putting in half effort. These empanadas represent her life story, where she comes from, and how she's able to share those experiences with the Tall City. Furthermore, Maria doesn't stay confined to the small four walls of her mobile kitchen. Ideas constantly find themselves being cooked and tested, forcing customers to want to come back for more. A prime example of effective ways to diversify the Midland community, Maria remains true to her roots, making her a one-of-a-kind cook, person, and business owner. Resolutions to delist Lesser Prairie Chicken heads to President's Desk by Mella McEwen. A waiting game is now underway to determine the future direction of the nation's Endangered Species Act, specifically as it pertains to the Lesser Prairie Chicken. The House of Representatives on Thursday passed SJ Resolution 9, a congressional review act designed to nullify the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service rule listing the bird as endangered. It passed the House in a 221 to 206 vote after passing in the Senate in early May on a 50 to 48 vote. It now heads to President Joe Biden's desk, where it is not certain if he will sign or veto the resolution. Congressman August Pfluger, whose District 11 includes much of the Permian Basin, voted for the resolution. Make no mistake, the administration's rule designating the lesser prairie chicken as an endangered species has nothing to do with protecting it, the San Angelo Republican told the Reporter-Telegram by email. It is merely a vehicle to shut down oil and gas production in the Permian Basin, which will also make it more difficult for farmers and ranchers to feed our country. We can protect important species without devastating our local and rural communities. He added, I'm proud that the House and Senate passed legislation to nullify this rule and urge future passage of my legislation to reform the Endangered Species Act and prevent the administration from holding our community hostage with radical environmental mandates. According to Pfluger's office, private industries have invested more than $64 million into conservation efforts and enrolled more than 6 million acres of land into voluntary conservation programs. Through these private efforts, the population of the species has grown from roughly 20,000 birds in 2013 to roughly 35,000 in 2020. A listing would effectively shut down private conservation efforts, impose new requirements on farmers and ranchers and the energy industry, and expose farmers to litigation and lawsuits for routine agriculture and energy activities. The Fish and Wildlife Services in November 2022 issued its decision to list the Southern District Population Segment, DPS, of the lesser prairie chicken, which is found in eastern New Mexico and across the southwest Texas panhandle, as endangered. The northern DPS of the bird, which is found in southeastern Colorado, south central to west Kansas, western Oklahoma, and the northeast Texas panhandle, is being listed as threatened. This spring, the Permian Basin Petroleum Association filed a lawsuit against the Department of Interior and Fish and Wildlife Service over the decision. Ben Shepard, president of the PBPA, said that while the association supports the resolution and other efforts in Washington, D.C. to overturn the listing, we still believe that a very valid, if not the best, path forward to supporting state-led conservation efforts for the lesser prairie chicken, and thus a delisting under the Endangered Species Act, is through our action in the Western Districts of Texas Federal District Court. Goodwill West Texas opens Career Center. The Midland Career Center is Goodwill's fourth regional career center in West Texas. By Ben Schaefer. Goodwill West Texas opened a career center Thursday at 4302 West Illinois Avenue. The Midland Career Center is Goodwill's fourth regional career center in West Texas, according to Caitlin Paonessa, Director of Marketing and Communications for Goodwill West Texas. Paonessa said the advantage of Goodwill's regional divisions is that they can tailor their programs and missions to the needs of West Texans. We were able to serve people in Odessa. We wanted to be more accessible to our community members here in Midland, she said. The Career Center's goal is to create opportunities for Midlanders and residents from surrounding communities who have struggled finding employment. We offer job coaching, job placement, support services. We partner with businesses and nonprofit organizations in the community that act as a community connection resource for members here, Paonessa said. In addition, the Commission on Accreditation of Rehabilitation Facilities accredited Career Center offers auxiliary services like resume writing and interview skills training. Really, if you have any kind of a barrier that you're facing to be able to get into the workforce, then we want to help you overcome that, Paonessa remarked. Champion X becomes 21st member of Permian Strategic Partnership. By Mella McEwen. Since its formation in 2019, the Permian Strategic Partnership has worked to offer support and solutions to a thriving region that continues to outpace the nation in economic growth. On Thursday, the PSP announced it was getting help with the addition of Champion X as its 21st member. Our board and leadership are excited to work alongside Shankar Annamalai, Senior Vice President, Permian Basin, and the Champion X team on transformative initiatives in education, healthcare, workforce development, and road safety. They are a wonderful addition to our team, Tracy Bentley, President and Chief Executive Officer at PSP, told the Reporter Telegram by email. In a statement, Annamalai commented, "Our purpose of improving lives translates into creating a meaningful and lasting impact in the areas we serve. We firmly believe that the strength of any community lies in the well-being of its citizens. And today, we take another step forward in our journey to support and empower the Permian Basin community. This membership reflects our genuine commitment to make a difference in people's lives and drive positive change." He continued, "We believe our membership in the Permian Strategic Partnership will help address critical challenges while also identifying new opportunities for sustainable growth and development. By investing in key areas such as education, healthcare, environmental conservation, local businesses, the PSP enhances the overall quality of life for community members, including our more than 1,000 team members who live and work in the region." PSP focuses on five strategic areas: education, road safety, healthcare, housing, and workforce development. Just a week ago, the partnership touched on three of those areas with a $5 million donation to the University of Texas Permian Basin that will allow the university to cover tuition and mandatory fees for graduate students majoring in clinical psychology, social work, counseling, or school counseling, and come from one of the 22 counties in West Texas and New Mexico that comprise the Permian Basin. Member companies include oil and gas producers, pipelines, and service companies. Champion X provides chemistry, artificial lift systems, and highly engineered equipment and technologies that help companies drill for and produce oil and gas safely, efficiently, and sustainably around the world. It also provides enhanced oil and gas production, transportation, and real-time emissions monitoring through the life cycle of a well. PSP members have committed $130 million in contributions to leverage more than $1 billion in collective investments, which have had transformational impacts on education, healthcare, workforce development, and road safety in the region. PSP member companies are Apache, BPX Energy, Champion X, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Coterra Energy, Devon, Diamondback, Endeavor, EOG Resources, ExxonMobil, Halliburton, Helmerich & Payne, Kinetic, Occidental, Ovintiv, Permian Resources, Pioneer Natural Resources, Plains All-American, SLB, and Waterbridge Resources. Big Bend National Park has free entry for Great American Outdoors Day by Mercedes Cordero. For those looking for a quick getaway before the start of the new school year, Big Bend National Park's entry fee will be waived on August 4th. In celebration of Great American Outdoors Day, entrance into Big Bend National Park will be free. The free entry is also one of five entrance fee-free days in 2023 when admittance to all national parks is free. The other two remaining free entry days are September 23rd for National Public Lands Day and November 11th for Veterans Day. The entrance fee-free days encourage people to discover the beauty, history, and inspiration awaiting them in more than 400 national parks throughout the country, National Park Service Director Chuck Sams said. National Weather Service, 98 degrees is more than a pop group by Stuart Doreen. If a high temperature of 98 degrees is one's cup of tea, then he or she will love the weather happening in Midland. The National Weather Service reported that the high temperature on Thursday reached 98 degrees for the second straight day. The National Weather Service also reported that the expected high temperature on Friday through Sunday will be 98 degrees, which is 2 degrees above the typical average for July 27th. Temperatures next week return to triple digits. There is also no rain in the 7-day forecast. Weather report, Thursday's high 98 degrees, typical high for July 27th, 96 degrees. Thursday's low 73 degrees, typical low for July 27th, 73 degrees. Record high for July 27th, 106 in 1944, 1954, and 1995. DPS, two die in rollover crash west of Andrews by Stuart Doreen. Two people died Wednesday morning following a rollover crash on State Highway 176 west of Andrews, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that a 2017 Ford F-750 was traveling westbound in Andrews County when it veered off the north side of the roadway. The driver then overcorrected back onto the highway, causing the F-750 to side skid and roll over. Both passengers of the vehicle were pronounced deceased at the scene. The passengers were Miguel De Los Santos Jr., 36, of Brownsville, and Juan Cerno Romero, 53, of Odessa, according to DPS. The driver was treated and released from Permian Regional Medical Center in Andrews. All three people in the vehicle were not wearing a seatbelt, the DPS reported. The accident took place around 3:50 a.m. Fall City Blues Fest announces lineup, tickets, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. The 11th annual Tall City Blues Fest, hosted at the Destination, announced the 2023 lineup. This year's festival will be headlined by Chicago-based jazzy rock and roll artist Guy King, while local and visiting artists perform in the lead-off spots. Each band will get an hour time slot. Kicking the party off at 5 p.m. will be one of Midland's youngest bands in the scene, Never Too Young, led by incoming Legacy senior Leon Carrasco and featuring incoming Compass Academy junior Elijah Ornelas, incoming Odessa sophomore Ian Chavez, and bandmate Adrian Revilla. Leo Hull and the Texas Blues Machine make their Tall City Blues Fest debut at 6 p.m., followed by Gulf Coast Roots music from the Mighty Ork. Well-known Texas wild man Ruben V. once again graces the fest stage with his skills at 8:15 p.m. before Guy King. An encore performance by West Texas crew Eddie Austin and the Review will start at 11 p.m., ending the event sometime late in the night. Early bird tickets for the September 23rd event are $20 and can be purchased at tallcitybluesfest.com until August 20th. Obituaries and death notices. Annie Thomas. Annie Mae Curtis Jones Thomas was born March 21, 1935, to Eddie B. Curtis Sr. and Johnny Mae Lee Curtis in Gonzales, Texas. Annie was preceded in death by her parents, ex-husband Joe Thomas, siblings Alice Curtis Jackson, Eddie B. Curtis Jr., Johnny Lloyd Jones Jr., Janice Jones, and Beverly Jones, her daughters Cynthia Jones and Deborah Jones, and a beloved nephew. To cherish her memory, she leaves her ex-husband Henry Jones Sr. and her siblings, R.D. James, Julius Jones, Dorothy Prince, Maureen Jefferson, Clay Jones, Carolyn Palmer, Alma Faye Palmer, Barbara Brunson, and R.C. Simon. Her children, Linnell Smith, Sharon Jones Chapel, Penny Watson, Johnny Lewis, Pamela Pride, Michael Jones Sr., Henry Jones Jr., and Mary Susan Jones Pounds. She had 16 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. Funeral services were held Friday, July 28, 2023. Services are under the care and direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. David Bosecker. David Walter Bosecker, a deputy sheriff at Eastland County Sheriff's Office, passed away on July 21, 2023. He was 57 years old. He was on a domestic call when fatally wounded. Funeral services directed by Davis Morris Funeral Home will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, July 29, 2023, at the Brownwood, Texas Coliseum. David was born in Pennington, Texas on July 13, 1967. He is survived by his wife, Brenda Elton Bosecker, of 26 years, stepson John Tanner Edwards, and grandchildren Lincoln and Henley Edwards, Brian Lynn, Eric Smith, and his father, Christian Frederick Bosecker of Midland, Texas. David is also survived by his mother, Rama Jean Ferry of Flat Rock, North Carolina, and his brother, Ted Bosecker. And he is survived by his much-loved dog, Jackie. In David's love for law enforcement and in lieu of flowers, the David Bosecker Memorial Fund is set up through the First Financial Bank of Eastland County, 201 East Main Street, Eastland, Texas, 76448. The phone number is 254-629-6139 for options of ways to save money. All monies will go help the Eastland County Sheriff's Office to provide gear needed to help their deputies be safer. Frances Darlene Simpson. Frances Darlene Simpson, 82, died Friday, July 21, 2023, in Benicia, California. Darlene was born September 15, 1940, in Roswell, New Mexico, to Laverne Francis Burroughs and Ruby McKee Burroughs. She was preceded in death by her brother Darryl Burroughs, and she is survived by her sister Doris Burroughs Armstrong. She is also survived by her husband of 63 years, Carol Dale Simpson, and their two daughters, Connie Simpson and Felicia Simpson Green. The family asks that donations be made to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital website or Samaritan's Purse. Johnny Orsak. Johnny Orsak, 86, of Midland, passed away July 24, 2023. There is no service planned. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
Cinema Under the Stars presents Monsters University by Odessa American, July 27, 2023. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center at 1310 North FM 1788 Midland will present Cinema Under the Stars, Monsters University on August 6th. The doors will open at 1:30 p.m. and the event will start at 3 p.m. This is a free event with reserved seating. Enjoy free popcorn from the Complex Community Federal Credit Union. Kinder Scott will be on site selling jewelry from their latest collection. 20% of the proceeds will be donated back to the local Midland Odessa charity. Food trucks will be parked in the Wagner Noel parking lot from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Please note, food trucks are independently operated. Wagner Noel is not responsible for their pricing or services. To reserve seats, visit tinyurl.com/3x3f3ye8. Online service fees will apply. Cornyn colleagues introduce bill to prevent fentanyl poisoning by Odessa American, July 27, 2023. Washington, U.S. Senators John Cornyn, R. Texas, Chris Coons, D. D.E., Tom Cotton, R. A.R., Bill Cassidy, R. L.A., and Amy Klobuchar, D. M.N., released the following statements Thursday on introduction of their Fentanyl Safe Testing and Overdose Prevention Act, which would help prevent deaths from fentanyl poisoning by increasing access to fentanyl test strips. Fentanyl is ravaging Texas communities, and poisonings among children and teenagers have skyrocketed in recent years, giving the rise in fake prescription pills containing this deadly drug, said Senator Cornyn in a press release. This legislation would help prevent deaths due to fentanyl poisoning by giving people the tools to identify it, and I urge my colleagues to pass it without delay. The fentanyl and xylazine crisis is inflicting unspeakable harm on communities in Delaware and across America. We must promote the use of tools that can prevent unnecessary tragedies, said Senator Coons in the release. I am proud to introduce this bipartisan bill with Senator Cornyn and my colleagues to make expressly clear under federal law what is already common sense. Testing strips save lives and should be readily and legally accessible throughout the country. Over 100,000 Americans died from drug deaths this year, many after ingesting fentanyl. This legislation will prevent overdoses by making it easier for medical clinics and individuals to rapidly test illegal drugs to find out if they have fentanyl in them, said Senator Cotton in the release. This alone will not solve the drug crisis we face, but it will help prevent overdoses by people who didn't realize fentanyl was in the drugs they took. This is more than one way to decrease the number of people dying from fentanyl, Senator Cassidy said in the release. This is one of them. Let's use every tool that we have. The fentanyl crisis has been exacerbated by the fact that too often those harmed by this deadly substance do not even realize that they are ingesting it. By making it clear that communities can use life-saving fentanyl testing strips, said Senator Klobuchar in the release. Our legislation will help ensure better detection of this dangerous substance and prevent avoidable tragedies. Companion legislation was introduced in the House of Representatives by Representatives Jasmine Crockett, Texas 30, and Lance Gooden, Texas 5. In 2022, 68% of the 107,081 reported drug overdose deaths were from synthetic opioids, mainly fentanyl. Xylazine has been increasingly found in fentanyl products, and the percentage of fentanyl-involved deaths with xylazine detected increased 276% from January 2019 to June 2022. In March of this year, the Drug Enforcement Administration, or DEA, administrator stated, "Xylazine is making the deadliest drug threat our country has ever faced. Fentanyl, even deadlier." The DEA's lab has also found that 6 out of 10 fentanyl-laced fake prescription pills analyzed in 2022 contain a lethal dose of fentanyl. This legislation would help prevent overdose deaths by giving people the ability to know if a drug or pill they are about to take has been mixed with fentanyl. Numerous state legislatures support these measures, and the Texas House of Representatives passed a similar bill by a vote of 143-2. The legislation is endorsed by the National Association of Police Organizations, Conservative Political Action Coalition, Faith and Freedom Coalition, National District Attorneys Association, Fraternal Order of the Police, Major Cities Chiefs Association, Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, Sergeants Benevolent Association, Louisiana Sheriff's Association, National Association of Counties, Addiction Policy Forum, Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America, and Right on Crime. Fighting Odessan Sauceda, Looking Forward to Next BKFC Fight in New Mexico by Michael Bauer, July 27, 2023. Jeremy Sauceda hadn't been involved in bare-knuckle fighting for very long. Then again, the bare-knuckle fighting championship, BKFC, hasn't been around too long either. While the sport itself has been around for centuries, the BKFC held the first sanctioned bare-knuckle card since the 1800s back in 2018 when the league got started. Sauceda, a native Odessan who graduated from Permian in 2008, has been training in the sport since 2021 and has been in 2 fights in the last year. His third will be coming up when he takes on Joshua Moreno on August 11th in Albuquerque, New Mexico. "I'm ready," Sauceda said. "I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it." Sauceda's days in bare-knuckle fighting began 2 years ago when former mixed martial artist Leonard Garcia from Lubbock was asked to participate in a BKFC card. After agreeing to it, Sauceda began training with Garcia. "Garcia knew I was a good boxer, so we started a training camp," Sauceda said. "He and I were sparring every week and getting him ready for his fight against Julian Lane. He told me that I could do a good job in bare-knuckle fighting. As it went on, he kept getting more fights, and I helped him prepare. He's a world champion in his weight camp." BKFC is presided over by former American professional boxer David Feldman. Each fight takes place in a specialized circular 4-rope ring referred to as the squared circle. Sauceda originally was a boxer but now does bare-knuckle fighting full-time. He talked about some of the differences between boxing and bare-knuckle fighting. "A lot of people ask me that," Sauceda said. "It's not just simply boxing without the gloves. It's hard to explain it to some people. When you eliminate that glove, it changes everything. Now you can grab your opponent with your bare hands and you can have an act to clinch. You can legally grab someone in the back of the neck as long as you're punching with your opposite hand. Then it's legal." After receiving approval to hold a sanctioned event in Cheyenne, Wyoming in 2018, BKFC held the first state-sanctioned bare-knuckle boxing event in the United States since 1889. "Since then, the sport has grown. It's kind of new, but it's growing crazy right now," Sauceda said. "Everyone loves it right now. Conor McGregor, the Diaz brothers, all those guys are in the works of joining bare-knuckle fighting. It's a big deal." Sauceda's first fight was against Roderick Stewart in August last year in Albuquerque, which resulted in a win for the Odessan. His recent fight was against Alonzo Martinez on May 19th in Omaha, in which he lost, bringing his record to 1-1 at the moment. For Sausita, training contains a lot of cardio and conditioning. What I've been doing these past couple of weeks, I've been using a very small glove or no glove at all, Sausita said. I'll wrap my wrist and make it as similar as possible when fighting an actual fight. Whoever's helping me train will put on a body vest and I'll be punching them bare knuckles to try and keep it as real without punching anyone in the face. He'll train out of different gyms in Odessa, including Crunch and True Fit. As far as boxing gyms, Sausita boxes out of Gorilla Heavy Hitters. The time Sausita takes in between each card depends on his condition from the previous fight. It depends on how healthy you are and how good you are, Sausita said. It can get pretty gruesome. You can take lots of cuts to the face really fast. Sausita has suffered his share of injuries. My first fight, my nose got broken pretty good, Sausita said. They put it back in place. That's the difference between bare knuckles and boxing. You get lots more cuts very quickly. It's worth it for Sausita, who enjoys taking part in a type of fighting where it's hard to fake anything. The boxing world has seen more celebrities and media personalities take part, mostly notable Jake Paul. However, Sausita feels that in bare knuckle fighting, nothing feels staged. I feel more fights these days are set up with all these celebrities, Sausita said. It's kind of brought the sport down from fighting and training hard to fighting a famous YouTuber. But in bare knuckle, it's hard to fake getting hit by a fist. I think it helps open people's eyes to combat sports again. July has been so blistering hot, scientists already calculate that it's the warmest month on record. By Associated Press, July 27, 2023. By Seth Borenstein, AP science writer. Washington. July has been so hot thus far that scientists calculate that this month will be the hottest globally on record and likely the warmest human civilization has been, even though there are several days left to sweat through. The World Meteorological Organization and the European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service on Thursday proclaimed July's heat is beyond record-smashing. They said the Earth's temperature has been temporarily passing over a key warming threshold, the internationally accepted goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit. Temperatures were 1.5 degrees warmer than pre-industrial times for a record 16 days this month, but the Paris Climate Accord aims to keep the 20- or 30-year global temperature average to 1.5 degrees. A few days of temporarily beating that threshold have happened before, but never in July. July has been so off the charts hot that heat waves blistering three continents, North America, Europe, and Asia, that researchers said that a record was inevitable. The U.S. Southwest's all-month heat wave is showing no signs of stopping while also pushing into most of the Midwest and East, with more than 128 million Americans under some kind of heat advisory Thursday. Unless an ice age were to appear all of a sudden out of nothing, it is basically virtually certain we will break the record for the warmest July on record and the warmest month on record, Copernicus director Carlo Buontempo told the Associated Press. Scientists say that such shattering of heat record is a harbinger for the future climate-altering changes as the planet warms. Those changes go beyond just prolonged heat waves and include more flooding, longer burning wildfires, and extreme weather events that put many people at risk. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres pointed to the calculations and urged world leaders, in particular of rich nations, to do more to reduce emissions of heat-trapping gases. Despite years of international climate negotiations and lofty pledges from the countries and companies, greenhouse gas emissions continue to go up. Climate change is here, it is terrifying, and it is just the beginning, Guterres told reporters in New York briefing. The era of global warming has ended. The era of global boiling has arrived. Buontempo and other scientists said the records are from human-caused climate change augmented by a natural El Niño warming of parts of the Central Pacific that changes weather worldwide. But Buontempo said ocean warming in the Atlantic also has been so high, though far away from the El Niño, that there's even more at play. While scientists long predicted the world would continue to warm and have bouts of extreme weather, he said he was surprised by the spike in ocean temperatures and record-shattering loss of sea ice in Antarctica. The climate seems to be going crazy at times, Buontempo said. Copernicus calculated that Through the first 23 days of July, Earth's temperature averaged 16.95 degrees Celsius, 62.5 degrees Fahrenheit. That's nearly one-third of a degree Celsius, almost 0.6 degrees Fahrenheit, hotter than the previous record for the hottest month, July 2019. Normally, records are broken by hundredths of a degree Celsius, maybe a tenth at most, said Russell Vose, Climate Analysis Group Director for the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Usually, records aren't calculated until a week or longer after a month's end, but Vose, who wasn't part of the research, his NASA record-keeping counterpart, Gavin Schmidt, and six other outside scientists said the Copernicus calculations make sense. Buono Tempo's team found that 21 of the first 23 days of July were hotter than any previous days in the database. The last few weeks have been rather remarkable and unprecedented in our record, based on data that goes back to the 1940s, Buono Tempo said. Both the WMO Copernicus team and the independent German scientist who released his data at the time came to these conclusions by analyzing forecasts, live observations, past records, and computer simulations. Separate from Copernicus, Karsten Hausten at Leipzig University did his own calculations using forecasts that show at best the warming may weaken a tad at the end of the month and came to the conclusion that July 2023 will pass the old record by 0.2 degrees Celsius, 0.36 degrees Fahrenheit. It's way beyond everything we see, Hausten said in his own press briefing. We're in absolutely new record territory. Hausten said that though records only go back to the middle of the 19th century, using tree rings, ice cores, and other proxies, he calculates that this month is the hottest in about 120,000 years, which Buono Tempo says makes sense. Other scientists have made similar calculations. The reason that setting new temperature record is a big deal is that we are now being challenged to find ways to survive though temperatures hotter than any of us have ever experienced before, University of Wisconsin-Madison climate scientist Andrea Dutton said in an email. Soaring temperatures place ever-increasing strains not on just power grids and infrastructure, but on human bodies that are not equipped to survive some of the extreme heat we are already experiencing. It is no accident that the hottest July on record has brought deadly heat waves in the U.S. and Mexico, China, and southern Europe. Smoke-causing wildfires and heavy floods worldwide, said Imperial College of London climate scientist Frederike Otto. The average temperature being measured is like the fever temperature that we measure for our planet, Otto said. We are in uncharted territory as far as humans on this planet are concerned, so our records are falling with increasing frequency, and that's exactly what we expect to and what we've been predicting would happen, says Texas Tech client scientist Catherine Hayhoe. In the middle of some of the worst heat, where Phoenix is now at a record 27 straight days and counting of 110 degrees or higher temperatures, University of Arizona climate scientist Catherine Jacobs said the records are giving humanity a message about reducing emissions of heat-trapping gases from the burning of coal, oil, and natural gas. Events like this are the signpost along a highway we don't want to travel. Jacobs said in an email, it's time to stop playing political games and get serious in order to protect ourselves and our future generations. Mexican national to serve 19 years in federal prison for drug trafficking by Odessa American, July 28, 2023. San Antonio. A Mexican national was sentenced in a federal court in San Antonio Tuesday to 168 months in prison for one count of possession with intent to distribute 50 grams or more of methamphetamine and one count of possession with intent to distribute 1 kilogram or more of heroin, plus 60 months in prison for one count of possession of a firearm in furtherance of a drug trafficking crime, a U.S. Department of Justice press release detailed. According to court documents, Eduardo Puente, 46, of San Buena, Coahuila, Mexico, a convicted felon with two outstanding Texas arrest warrants, came under an FBI Safe Streets Task Force investigation in January 2022 and was identified as the source of supply for two controlled narcotics purchases of methamphetamine. On February 17, 2022, the task force, with assistance from the Texas Department of Public Safety troopers and criminal investigation division agents, observed Puente carrying a white shoebox en route to a third controlled purchase as part of the investigation. DPS troopers and CID agents conducted a traffic stop on Puente, which led to a foot pursuit, during which he tossed a Ruger .357 revolver. Puente was assisted in the pursuit by an individual in a red Chevrolet Silverado who picked Puente up to aid in his escape. DPS executed a traffic stop on the red truck. Though Puente again attempted to flee on foot, he was arrested. In search of Puente and his vehicle, DPS troopers and FBI agents seized 8 small bags of suspected methamphetamine, a bag of black tar substance suspected to be heroin, and $2,090 in cash. In search of a Puente's residence, FBI agents seized 2.281 kilograms of marijuana, 3.016 kilograms of heroin, and 44.021 kilograms of methamphetamine. They also seized a .223 caliber rifle loaded with armor-piercing rounds and approximately $6,400 in cash. "I commend the efforts of our federal and state law enforcement partners in this case," said U.S. Attorney Jamie Esparza, for the Western District of Texas in the release. "Their work on the ground resulted in a significant seizure of illegal drugs, which would have otherwise been distributed in our community. This sentence is a victory for public safety, and I'm grateful for their dedication to keeping our streets safe. This sentencing sends a clear message that the FBI and our law enforcement partners will continue to work diligently to hold criminals who are bringing dangerous drugs into our communities accountable for their actions." Acting Special Agent in Charge Marcus Joachim for the FBI San Antonio Division said in the release, "The American people deserve to live in communities safe from violence and criminal activity associated with illegal narcotics trafficking." The FBI and DPS investigated the case. Assistant U.S. Attorney Karina O'Daniel prosecuted the case. New Operations Director Sees Himself as a Servant by Ruth Campbell, July 27, 2023. A desire to serve people and take worries off their shoulders has left Sam McGowan to his new post as Executive Director of Operations for Ector County ISD. He arrived in Odessa from the same job in the Hobbs, New Mexico Municipal Schools, which has 10,000 students. McGowan said that it is the same scope of work, but it is a little different in terms of process. When a worker comes through, they still need to get done. And so it's just about how you mobilize people here versus in a different district, McGowan said. ECISD is somewhat bigger than Hobbs, with about 33,500 students. He also has worked at Midland ISD. "The great thing about large districts like ECISD and MISD is that there's people in place. Instead of one painter, you have two painters. It's one of those things that scope of work matches the people behind it," McGowan said. He was in Hobbs for a year, but he has been around the Odessa-Midland area for 18 years. He's also worked in Greenwood ISD, Big Spring, and Sanderson, so coming to Odessa is like coming home. "I'm from La Mesa, Texas. There's nowhere else, and this is my opinion. You can't find beautiful sunsets and sunrises like you can out here. I think you must have to be from out here to appreciate those things," McGowan said. He started his bachelor's degree at Angelo State University and finished his bachelor's and master's degree at the University of Texas Permian Basin. McGowan has been a teacher, coach, and building administrator through the years. "I think that's what gives me a unique perspective about things that we do in operations," McGowan said. "When you're a building principal, the campus is your house. Like any homeowner, you want the best products, the best roof, and the best flooring. I always, always take into consideration the world that they're living in and the urgency of the matter because I've lived those things. I think it's a great bridge to use to be able to know and say, hey, I've been there, I get it. Here's what I can do and here's what I can't do," he said. "Sometimes you might need to explain that it's a budgetary issue or the work needs to be done. For example, if they are going to paint a building, it might be better to do it in the summer when the students aren't there. I love every bit of school. My favorite year is this year. I like to have a good time where I'm at, like to learn the people, learn the culture, and see where I fit in to see if I can add value. This is y'all's culture right now, and I am trying to see if I can help in any capacity, McGowan said. It's important to me, growing up in West Texas, growing up in La Mesa, you always heard about Ector County or Midland, and we just couldn't wait to get there, he added. He knew in junior high that he wanted to be a teacher, McGowan said. He was able to do that because he had great connections through coaches who really invested in kids and took pride in what they did. This made a huge impression on him. Though his experience in different buildings in different capacities, McGowan said he's figured out that people are doing their best. They're working hard, and I don't want them to worry about lights. I don't want them to worry about if this functions or not. I want them to be able to be in a facility that we're proud of, that they can look at and go, that's mine, that's a goal. That's something that's in my heart that I want to be able to accomplish for every building principal, for every student that walks in the building. They should get the same experience. Every child should get the same experience walking into a building, McGowan said. He added that he has always loved the idea of being a servant. I have no aspirations of doing Dr. Murray's job by any means. That man is so calm and cool. Just in the short time that I've been here, I've learned a lot. I am a support role type of person, and that's what I want to be, McGowan said. Dr. Murray is ECISD's superintendent, Scott Murray. The amount of support he has received at ECISD is incredible. It's been awesome. I really appreciate the people that I work with. I don't feel like I work for Dr. Murray. I feel like I work with Dr. Murray. That motivates me to want to get things off his plate for him not to worry about some things. The people that we have in our other departments, they're incredible. I'm super excited to be part of this team, and I want to be able to help in any way that I can. I'm open to their suggestions. I'm open to them, and I'm listening for sure. They've been here. They know the do's and don'ts. So why wouldn't I listen? He and his wife, Amanda, have one son. Amanda is a chief of federal programs at Region 18 Education Service Center and has extensive school district experience. Anthony Cirola, assistant superintendent over athletics, human capital, and operations, is thrilled to have McGowan on board. I am pleased that ECISD identified an executive director of operations with the extensive experience that Mr. McGowan has. He has served Texas school districts as a classroom teacher and campus administrator at both the elementary and secondary level. He also has experience as a central office administrator in district operations. We are confident that he will be an exemplary leader for ECISD and ensure that all students are served in facilities that are conducive to learning, Cirola said. OC Downtown Ribbon Cutting Ceremony by Michael Bauer, July 27, 2023. A ribbon-cutting ceremony took place Thursday morning at Odessa College's downtown campus, which includes a new space designed for entertainment and education.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.